When it comes to weight management, we tend to focus on what we eat, but Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. That's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up today.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 602. Going to recap the week in Fab as usual, talk some strategy, lessons learned, and much, much more because we can't stay on track on this show. No, we can't. You can find me on Twitter at BDMTrick and my guest, as usual, on a Monday or a Tuesday this season on Twitter at Mike_Curlin. Mike Curlin, how are we doing, my friend?
Better now that I'm here with you, Bubba. Better now that I'm here with you. Because everything else is going to absolute crap. So why not enjoy the little things, you know, like getting to complain about it with you behind the scenes and you having to deal with it.
It's so much fun. I woke up this morning to 27 text messages from the GTE group chat.
Was it me today?
No, you had Simeon talking with you this time. It wasn't just you for once.
We were talking. Well, we actually started off talking about, I think I randomly tweeted in our tweeted. It's not even Twittering, where it doesn't matter. I think I randomly text you about make sure you draft a certain player later on, like where you should take them, because I know you're doing your first draft tonight. It's kind of exciting.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to seeing the results and laughing at them, because there's gonna be so much that none of us agree with, but then there's gonna be some sharp people making some really sharp picks. Mm-hmm. And aren't you? I know you were competitive. I know you were winning that league at one point this year.
Well, we'll make 105 picks now. We'll do the first seven rounds, 15 team DC. I was first for most of the season. I am in second by a half a point now. It keeps going back and forth with me and Steve Meyer. And I believe James Anderson's coming up in third. My team all season has barely been able to field a roster due to injuries. This week I had two IL guys in my lineup. So it's gotten that bad. Like, I'm literally just like praying I can hang on to cash at this point, because I was dominant. I had a top 50 DC team at one point with this roster. It is like 540 right now. In a matter of a month and a half. Yeah. It's just,
tell me about it.
It's a war of attrition. It's a war, and I can't even make Fab moves. That's the worst part. I'm literally sitting there just like, okay, please God, just please anybody with the breath, make it. Like, I have Javier Assad pitching for me each week right now.
I had a team that was starting Parker Meadows out of necessity at one point, hoping they'd get the call. Finally got the call when I don't need them. So, I get what you mean. Like, I would start like on some of these really early DCs from like December, January, that are, by the way, doing awful. I would just be starting guys like Jake Alou before he's getting called up, hoping that there's an injury that maybe he'll get in that bat this week. That's right. So I get it. Like, that's what, and that's the bittersweet part of these early DCs. Like, it's honestly some of the best draft prep you'll ever get. Unfortunately, it's a pretty penny for a mock draft, so to speak. $150 price point for DC, I believe, right?
$150 for a DC, $50 for an NFBC 50.
And NFBC 50s are great if you're into 12 teamers. I think those are super helpful.
You know what's interesting though, is I'm looking back on these, and I love playing like my 12 team fab leagues, my OCs. I don't play many 15 team fabs for money. I got paid TG, FBI, and stuff. But when it comes to DCs or NFBC 50s draft and hold formats, my DCs are doing great. Pretty much no matter what time of year I drafted, where my early 50s sucked. My later 50s have been okay. I don't know if that's just because I know the depth of the player pool, which has helped me more in 15s. I don't know, because you're not playing against dummies either. So it's not like they don't know what's coming up. It's just, it's an interest looking at stuff. And we talked about it in our chats and everything, how we're going to, it'll be fun to look back when the season's over and really kind of evaluate things. But I'm already noticing that kind of trend in my drafting.
This year in DCs, I took a step, like more of a linear step, because I thought I was going to be really improved this year. And I was way more prepped than ever before. Yeah, and then every year I find a way to prep more. But this year I just prepped wrong. I was really focused on 40-man rosters, fourth outfield types. I didn't give enough credence to the whole player teams are going to be more aggressive with minor leaguers. So I should have ignored 40-man, so to speak, because you turn around and the 40-man didn't matter as much, because although it did help with fringe players, like you got guys like Stuart Fairchild, maybe, you know, just guys giving you meaningful playing time throughout the year. Just and that was the random name because I saw he went on IL again today. But yeah,
again,
and I remember him being kind of like a couple dollar pickup for streams, you know, when they had lefty heavy. It doesn't matter. Anyway, my point being is I put too much value in those types of players instead of like, all right, teams are going to be uber aggressive this year. So it's like, and it wasn't even the depth of the hitters, because obviously me having, like, I had Nolan Jones on a ton of early ones. So Nolan Jones, Max Kepler, these were reserve round guys I knew were going to play, and they've been good. So it's really been my pitching that's, you know, I have a couple Lorenzen, guys like that, but it's like I have none of the Gavin Williams. I have none of the Bryce Millers. I just didn't put enough weight into, and obviously I should have known it seems like the Mariners are going to be aggressive. And so now it's like, unfortunately, I'm adapting, and so is everyone else. So anybody who had that approach this year had that step forward. And it's always about staying a step ahead of your competition next year. But I think it's like the farther we get away from 2020 and the farther we get into the new rules, that gap gets narrower and narrower in terms of finding that edge, because everyone has the – it's becoming more than ever an equal playing field. And then you have people like us doing content year round. We're not going to stop doing content come October. Yeah. Might take a small break, but – we'll be back talking about early players that we're looking at in DCs, and it's not just us, but other people are doing this. And there's people that are doing this without putting it out for content purposes. So they get an edge by having like, look at this guy going pick 500 in these early DCs. And this guy has a clear path to starting next year. It's Carlos Santana goes from like mid 500s to like mid 300s in a couple months. And those are the types of players that make a big difference. And if you draft early, you won't be ahead of, but at the end of the day, there's just a lot. I don't know, DC, that's a whole other offseason topic, because I'm still honing in on my DC strategy. I thought, like, again, I know the player pool well enough to do them, but it's a mixed bag. I have a lot of teams, like, my early teams are shot, but I have some NFBC 12s, 50s are, like, first and second place, I think, right now. I'm holding on. I have a couple DCs that are fourth and fifth. Those hurt because it's right down the money. My main event is sinking ship. So it's like I took a step forward as a player this year. I've talked to a lot of guys, and people have noticed that, like, yeah, like now they actually, I got that kind of like that nod of respect just for even seeing my name in that email. It kind of got some attention my way. But at the end of the day, it sucks because I missed my, and we're going to talk about tonight. Fab was my downfall this year as to why I'm struggling to compete in my main event right now. Like I went from like, you know, it hurts 2/3 of the year. I'm a top 10, top 15 team all season. I'm crushing it. I'm making the right moves, a little overspend here and there on Fab. Come to the final home stretch, and I lost so many key pieces that I didn't set myself up to take on those hits. And I don't think necessarily most teams would be. It's not like you can just make up for reference.
Let's stop. Yeah, we're going to get to Fab in a minute.
Yeah, like that, sorry.
Let's go back to this DC talk.
Yes.
Go ahead. What's going to be interesting is you mentioned, you know, we didn't account for all these rookies getting pushed up, and I've heard a lot of people say that. So one thing I'm looking forward to is looking at like the top, you know, 20, 25 teams in DCs. Like, were they still we talk about just maximizing ABs and pitching and stuff, all that stuff. Are those like Steve Myers doing great again? And he doesn't care much about rookies. So, like, I'm curious to see how the overall landscape is. It like 50-50? Is it pretty much just the normal, like, hey, we're just loading up on dudes and avoided injuries? How's that going to play out? That's a big factor, too. Like, we were joking about, I'm just begging to have a starting roster right now. It's gotten to that point, which is, you know, I don't think it matters what time of year you drafted it, and you just got kind of the bad end of the stick on that one. But that'll be fun to check out. At the same time, it'll be as – All these teams are calling up all these guys from AA. Well, next year, how many guys are going to be available from single A and AA to get called up? Like, each team only has so many players. Let's be real about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
So that'll make it like, where do we see that kind of playing out next year as well, which is a whole other landscape in these DCs.
Oh, for sure. And I think you're going to see players like, you'll start seeing the veterans get pushed down, which will help us again. Like, if you can get next year's Brent Rooker, if you just happen to catch that lightning in a bottle. And those are the types of players that make a huge difference, because you're getting them for the best of their production. You can bench them when they start sucking again, because you're not going to need them at that point. Well, more than likely if you've drafted enough depth. And I think what we're doing better is not only, I think everyone in fantasy is getting better at player analysis. That's not even the hard part anymore. I think roster construction is still the thing that people need to learn to get better at. And that's why you have players that, like, you don't need to be the best at player analysis or in-depth analysis if you don't know how to apply it. I can tell you, this person's fastball is really good. It plays up in the zone, this, this, and that, but it doesn't mean anything if I can't apply that to winning my fantasy leagues. It makes me a good analyst. I can help you with like, hey, this is good information, but he has a 4.4 ERA and you can understand why he's underperforming his underlying metrics. But if the production is, if the production isn't there, or if you're picking a player based on this and you can't quite apply it to building your team around that properly, it really doesn't help you as a player. So there's a really, and this is, I'm speaking as if I'm a pro at this now. It's just, I just feel confident in the fact that I used to be kind of stuck in this. I can't quite take the analysis and apply it to the game. This year was my first year of really putting it all together, realizing, okay, I know what I'm doing now and I'm feel confident in it. I feel like I'm a good player. I'm not a great player yet now. I want to get there, but it's aggravating because to find such success for most of the year, to turn around and I'm struggling to stay in top 100 in my main event. This is, again, a team I was top 15 most of the year and all that. And it's just aggravating because you learn so many lessons and it sucks that it's one of those things where you start getting in your own head. Will I ever repeat this again? Was this a one-time thing that I blew my shot on? But it's like, you need to run pure in pretty much any format to win an overall. Let's just get that out of the way. Winning your individual league, that takes skill in itself, but to win an overall takes a lot of luck as well. And although fantasy baseball has a lot less luck than most sports, it's mostly injury luck, not so much performance luck.
That's what it is. Yeah.
It's mostly injury luck. You need to avoid the freak injuries. You got to avoid the, I don't know, what India's random plantar fasciitis or the obliques or the, like, I can, you know, or wait, well, I'm just being biased now, but Josh Young's, he took a liner off his glove in the field and broke his thumb.
Yeah, like, real fluky, like hit by a pitch injuries. Like Thyro Estrada gets hit by a pitch. Now his whole season's
derailed. Well, he gets hit by a pitch like every third at bat. It feels like
I'm saying, like it just derails him over and over again. So
but yeah, stuff like fluky that. Fluky injuries for sure. So like that's the stuff that you can't you can somewhat prepare for, as in like maybe you start holding on to depth, or you start, you know, even when you have some cash, maybe you have more fab than the rest of the league and you're like, you know, I don't really need this Matt McClain type, but I'm gonna go ahead and get him just because you can never have enough depth. And that was something I learned early on when I was like, oh, I have enough pitching. And that was something that was like, well, I'm trying to remember, oh, it was the Guilds. Of course it was the Guilds. He's like, Guilds, dude, yep. You might have it now, but you never know when you're gonna need it. So if you really like a guy, just get him anyway, or go for him and at least put a good bid on him. And so it's like stuff like that was, it really stuck with me because he's like, yeah, he's right, because right now I have it. But then prime example of you know, I lost three like huge pieces to my team in the same week, or like within a week of each other, and it was like, now suddenly I'm like that's where it's like having depth has helped me, you know, tread water, but it stopped me from having a team that can compete in the overall to a team that I'm hoping to win my league with because of. And so it's like, at least I had those pieces in place to be able to fill in and plug these holes, so the sinking ship is just sinking slower. I'm hoping to fill in the parts around it, but yeah. Enough of that. Now that we've now that we're like 10 minutes in, I hope everyone enjoyed the strategy and all that stuff talk. But there's gonna be a lot of that in the offseason because I have so much to. I've been taking notes throughout the year, and I'm gonna go back. Like you said, we're gonna do like a post mortem on some of our teams and just some of the overall stuff. Look at what went right, what went wrong, and that's the type of stuff I think is the most helpful in the offseason. And learning from your mistakes and hoping to build from that, because obviously that's life in general, but fantasy baseball, that's where I'm at in my life right now.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely talk about it, because I know we've done it a lot in the past and it's helped me. Like, you know, you're becoming a better player. I know I don't know where the dust will settle with about a month and a week to go, but on paper, I'm having one of my better seasons right now. Hopefully, like, it doesn't completely unravel, but a lot of that's because of lessons learned in the past. Like, I learned, you know, X, Y, and Z, but I'm also learning there's more I can do to obviously keep going. So yeah,
and like I said, the biggest thing for me as a player this year was to learn how to take this level of analysis I'm doing and apply it. That was kind of the thing, because like I always knew how to break down a player. I've always gotten better at it, and I've known what to look for, but now it's breaking down a player and understanding their skill sets and applying it to fantasy and you know, implementing projections and kind of taking it, just I took it up another level, and I really feel confident in my process now, especially with streaming hitters. And it's one of those things where you just start have to tinker with it and have to get better. And I think fab management and roster, and obviously roster construction is always going to be a prime focus, because without roster construction, you can't win, period. That's what it's all about. You can ride every hot hand, but if you're riding every hot hand and just all they're doing is giving you RBIs and home runs, like that's only two out of the five. You know what I mean? So you have to always, it's really about balance, but construction, you got to pick the right players in the right spots, you know? So at the end of the day, it's a rant, but something's been on my mind, because it's like, the importance of roster construction, although we talk about it, I feel like it's never truly beaten. People says like, look, you master roster construction, you're going to master winning these leagues, because at the end of the day, if you can build a team that's consistent and performs day in, day out, or week in, week out, and, you know, can avoid the big slumps while sustaining a solid level production while hitting those highs, That's what's going to get you winning. Like, and that's why you see a lot of these successful players. They have a really strong process, and they were really good. They're really good at identifying talent, but also identifying but also building that roster around talent. Because you can have every Nolan Jones, every Ha-Seong Kim, who's having a hell of a year, Lane Thomas. You can have all those guys on the team and still lose. Heck, I have Acuña on my team. And I'm barely winning my league. I'm in second right now in my league, and I have Acuña. So it's like, obviously,
Bloomfield talks about how he has Acuña and a DC, and he only has like 20 something hitting points.
And that goes to show you that one player, no matter how elite of a year they're having, means nothing in baseball, in fantasy baseball, which is why I love fantasy baseball, because it really does. It does take a lot more than one player to win you a league. Now, there are league winners, but like Ha-Seong Kim and Lane Thomas, I feel like those are guys you can put in that lane, in that league winner conversation. Chas McCormick, Nolan Jones, those guys. But the thing is, what makes them league winners is that they are adding to a team that's already elite. Like, you don't, the league winners don't just, they can catch, I guess, in head-to-head formats, kind of like in fantasy football, you can just kind of catch that one guy and he'll carry you through the playoffs type of thing. But that's still usually not enough, because you still need your other guys to perform to expectations for these guys to be able to implement that league winner type of, you know, production. So the term league winner is overused and thrown around too much, honestly.
I agree. You need to have the other pieces to go with it, but it is kind of funny. Rob McCabe, who does a lot of cool like fab analysis each week on Twitter, he tweeted something out because he's been looking into kind of roster construction a bit, and I think he'll do more as well. I think it was the top like 20, 25 teams in OCs right now. I think about 20 of them at least had Otani or Acuña on it. So, again, not the end-all be-all, because you still have to build around that. But, like, we saw that last year with, like, Aaron Judge. He was obviously a major staple on some teams. But I think a lot of it, like, I know people probably don't even care at this point, but, like, looking at my teams that are doing really well or that could be doing well, it's like I'm dominating either pitching or hitting, and I have another the other category is, like, struggling tremendously. That's a combination of roster construction and injuries is what that comes down to. Like, I didn't do it properly. I love Team Borny. And that's why, like, we're going to talk about some players later on in the show, and I'll probably save it for that. But I'm okay with, you know, letting someone else go pay for, you know, the big flashy toy, and I'll get Team Boring here, and I'll just put them in a lineup and go, okay, by the end of the week or the end of, like, the month, they might have one bad start, but they'll have four good starts, and we're going to rock and roll. Like, so I'm cool with Team Boring.
The only problem with Team Boring is that, like, say you have a Kyle Gibson, Team Boring. He's a guy that I rode with for a couple, you know, for a good part of the beginning of the season. And he's been serviceable all year. But that same guy can be really good for you, get you three wins in a month, mid-3 ZRA, not crush your whip, turn around and you're riding him out for the next month. And you kind of forget about him because he's Team Boring. And then you look up and he has like a 5.5 ERA for the month with like a 1.5 whip, and you're like, oh, like, so it's like sometimes Team Boring can get you complacent if you're not too careful. So you gotta be very mindful of these boring players, because set and forget isn't always beneficial, because then you get guys like Gene Segura, what's his face for the Cronenworth, guys that are just that were just awful this year, and people just kind of left them in there without thinking twice. So it's almost like I prefer to have a little more volatility, because it causes me to be more in tune with what the player is actually doing versus just assuming that they're going to be okay, or assuming that, oh, he's just Cronenworth, he's going to be fine, like, he'll do his thing. Meanwhile, you just took a month of a 240 batting average, if you're lucky, with like barely any home runs, kind of minimal. Like, he did more damage than good for you that month compared to the guy you could have been streaming this whole time had you been paying attention to Cronenworth more in depth for that month, because you just assumed he'd be fine because he was Cronenworth. That's the only thing, that's the only pushback I have about being over the top. Again, it's all about balance. Team, there's nothing wrong with a boring player, but don't get complacent because you're so used to the certain level of production that they might not give you, especially if it's an elongated period of, it said, you know, mediocrity or less. So that's why I prefer the volatility a little more, just because it keeps you on my toes and it makes me, I like to be able to turn and burn a little more versus, I don't mind streaming him off my bench. I don't mind having a boring guy on my bench just to have in case of injury or whatever.
And maybe that's more with the pitching. I'm not saying it's like leave them in the whole time, but like, if they have a bad start, okay, see why they had the bad start. Did they change velocities? Did things change?
I think pitching gives you a little more answers, though. That's the thing.
Where it makes you take them out. Hitting, you can still get on it. Like, I do a lot of stuff, but I people probably are annoyed. I talk about the DFS helps me a ton.
I would say DFS is huge, because it's similar to what I do with the lineup mining.
I can see not just playing time situations, but hey, this guy's heating up, this guy's cooling down. Like, maybe he's getting platoon more, which is playing time, but you start to see things a little quicker than, you know, you go and look at a last 14 on Fangraphs and you're like, oh crap, what just happened? But you might figure it out a week earlier type stuff. Like, I don't do it every week, but I know I've been early on some of the hitters and pitchers I pick up just from seeing like little things on DFS. So the little nuggets like that.
DFS is huge, and DFS is very similar, especially on the hitter side, to, like I said, the content I do, which for GT and for the Athletic on occasion, which I haven't done in a while for them, which is whatever. I'm not gonna lie, I skipped out on my last article because I was like, I completely biffed it. It's the summer, kids are out of school. I didn't think about it anyway, so I biffed it, and at that point I was like, it's too late. So it was supposed to be my final article. I never got to it. Doesn't matter. I'm a failure. Whatever, call it what you want. But the GTA, I don't miss my deadlines, or if I do, I just just do it. Like, say it was like a really long out. It was like recaps and lineup over the whole last 3-4 days. Like, I just did a really big write up. It doesn't matter. I cover everything. I don't miss anything. And this year the Savant recaps were a big addition because now I don't miss pitching stuff. And this is the first year I'm like, I'm over here in August going into September. Like, I know everything about every pitcher. I can tell you what happened to Sandy Alcantara, how he found he addressed the mechanical flaw in the start against Boston, I believe it was. And then I think I texted to the group chat, like, how ever since then he leaned on the changeup more. And he's been great. I haven't been able to do that in years past because I haven't had a good system in place with my content. So it was nice to get a kind of a content flow, which helped me. Again, it's all about managing. I think that's helped me to gain my ADHD and like, okay, this is you're good. You have a system now in terms of content, player approaching, like what you're doing. But going back to what you were saying, DFS is very similar to the lineup stuff because it just keeps your eyes on everything. You're not missing much. You're catching the platoons. You're catching the playing time. You're catching the performers. Guys like Michael Massey moving up the lineup. He's batting third lately. Stuff like that because you're trying to attack plate appearances as well as matchups in DFS. So it's the same concept. So if you're a DFS player, you should really be approaching your waiver wire weekly with that mindset of, let me turn and burn, let me get these guys running hot / performing / playing well. And then you look at schedules, etc. We've talked about that process, and we'll talk about it again in the offseason because I think I can still improve that process as well. But I'm pretty pleased with my hitting side of things. It's still the pitching side. I'm with you. Kind of, I feel good about identifying talent in the preseason. It's about making sure I address. I don't know what I do with the pitching. I got to go back and look at my pitching because I think my pitching staff is so solid, and for them to just suck right now and not get me where I need to get. I don't know if it's just underperformance, fatigue, a little bit of both. Were they overperforming all year? Did I get a false sense of confidence in certain guys? So there's stuff like that. It's like, I got to readjust that. Maybe be a little more aggressive on the waiver wire with them because I just rested on the fact that I had what was a very solid pitching staff most of the first half. And I still think they are. It's just they're not playing up to expectations. So anyway, doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, that's the ups and downs fun of this thing, and we still have 5 more weeks to grind it out here in Fab. So you wanted to talk about some Fab lessons, or I don't know if you covered it all there, or if you have more you wanted to get to.
Always have more.
Yeah, so what did you want to discuss on this one? Because I know I have some concepts in my mind, and one thing I'll say is Jenny Butler was on Vlad's pod last week, and she mentioned she's doing a weekly Fab diary or journal on it. I think it's a very interesting idea to remind yourself why you did what you did, so you don't look back at the end of the season and go, why did I spend all this money? But you wrote down, like, well, this is what my thought process was. Like, maybe my process was wrong, but this was my thought process. So that's like a good way to kind of look at it too.
Well, see, I feel like that would be more helpful with pitchers than with hitters, because with me, it's always the same. It's a very strict hit process with hitters, and it hasn't failed me. Like, I've overspent this year, and that's part of the lesson learned here is I tend to, when I get really hyped up about a hitter, I tend to overvalue them compared to the, but then again, I look at my league and I was always like, my league itself wasn't very aggressive on some of these hitter streamers, but then like what I spent on them was like average, especially when, Waxman does his review. My stuff will be like, my bids will be on the lower end or in the middle. So it's like, I always was okay in terms of market value, but I didn't do so well reading my league. But then there's times where it's like, okay, my league did this so many times, I'm going to go ahead and bid lower. And then next, that guy was Fab for the same price that like the guy last week was, that I thought that I overpaid for. So it's been aggravating. But at the end of the day, what I think I need to do is, especially early in the year when there's so much more on the waiver wire, and there's always seems to be hitters like every week. There's always like a handful of hitters I love every week. So maybe I just need to set a price, like, hey, look, I'm going to 3-5% on these guys. Like, that's the most I'm going, 3-5% of my budget every week on this group of 5 hitters. And I will take whichever one I get instead of like, okay, I'm going to put this guy up at 25, this guy at 15, this guy at 17. And the only time maybe it's like, okay, I'll break my rule of like 3-5%. If I really believe in a guy, I think he's like Nolan Jones was a guy obviously you and I were in on. And I go back, I defer to him a lot because he's just a guy that I would have done this for in terms of like, all right, cool. This is my valuation process for a typical streamer. I see him as somebody who could last longer than that. So I'm going to bump him up like maybe 2x, 3x to what I would bump a typical streamer, right? And maybe he'd be more strict about applying percentages on streamers and non-streamers. In terms of non-streamers, be more liberal, like try to read the market, try to read the league itself, and try to gauge what they're all that what's going to happen and where I need to price them at. But then if I strictly view them as like, hey, this is one, maybe 2 weeks, this is my price, and this is what's going to be my price for all these guys down the board, maybe like a dollar less, as I mean, maybe, you know, waterfalls down from like 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but always keep that price pretty strict and be okay with whoever you get, because you have to remember that that guy's likely on your team for 1 or 2 weeks most of the time. So if that's the case, you're over here spending way more than you probably should on streamers throughout the year because you have a bigger budget because everyone else is going after the same guys. But maybe be more open-minded and okay with missing out on my top target and be okay. Like, well, there's a reason why you have five other names on this waterfall. You should be okay with all of them if you get them. So don't get so attached to certain players because they've been really good and you see some skill sets you like. But you really only want them because they're a strong side platoon and they have 5 out of 6 righties. Treat them like that, as if you would treat them at the end of the year, where you know you're turning and burning those guys. Don't go around blowing your fab. So that was kind of my big things, was be less aggressive in how much I put on a player early on in the year, but just be more willing to like accept what the fate might have in terms of like who you land. And it's one of those things where it's going to be, obviously you got to be very careful, because with everybody having more money, you can't just go around putting $5 and less on everybody early on in the year. But maybe should be, like, I'm thinking, like, because it's rare. Like, if I go back and look, how many of these streamers really stuck?
I'm thinking the strategy, and I'm not disagreeing with it, because I am and I'm not. Like, I am, because obviously, if you're aggressive on a guy like Matt McClain, it's paid off in freaking space.
Well, but that's not a streamer.
That's true. So you're talking streamers over. You would still bid high on certain guys like a Matt McClain.
Yes.
That's where I was going to ask. Are you just never going to bid on any of
no,
the.
No.
Because then you'll never win. Like,
no, well, that's okay, what I was saying.
Never,
like,
say never. I won't say never, but you better be a damn good streamer.
That's why I use Nolan Jones as a reference point. I believe in a guy, I'm going to bid higher than that allotted amount, but I want to keep it. I want to bring those bids down, because if I go back and look, I overspent. Like Jake Bowers, I was like 19-2. And guys like that were.
Well, that's like the worst feeling in the world, too, because you know you're not going to keep him for a while. You just spent so much more over.
Like, because he was super hot and was like, you know, had like.
Then he hasn't done anything since Rizzo's gone to the IL. Nothing.
He's gotten like, back when I got him, he was like coming off like a 3-home run week. He had like a 6 out of 7 in New York that week, and he was like 6 righties. I'm like, short porch. Hitting well, like I wanted them, and then I should have kept like $7-8. He's still been overspend, but at least if I had that number in mind, I wouldn't have. It would have saved. Right now, I'd have $10 right now, and $10 right now. That goes. So that kind of leads me to the next one. So what I was getting at was be a little more strict in my pricing early on with guys I view strictly as streamers, especially those platoon bats that I don't think will last beyond a week or two based on matchups.
Before you go to your next step, mm-hmm. I want to get a thought in here.
Go ahead.
The other reason I think this is a very interesting thought process, and obviously we'll dig into more of this stuff later, but it can help people for the last few weeks at least. One thing I know, Curl and I, Simeon, Jorge, others obviously, but in our little group chat for sure, we've acknowledged it, and we're not the only ones, like I say, is there's a reason why pitching goes so high, is you want that kind of floor pitching, because back to Curlin's streamers comment, there's always hitters available. Always hitters available. Like I'll write my waiver wire article. Curlin will do his schedule thing. And we're both sitting there on a Sunday texting going, there's like 10 hitters I'd have zero problem adding this week to play. And I'm having trouble finding like 2 pitchers right now. Sometimes 1 that you're like confident going with. You put in bids on like 5 because you just need a freaking pitcher. But half of them you're like not feeling warm and fuzzy about. Where at least the 5th hitter on your list, you're like, okay, I can, you know, I could see maybe a homer or 2, maybe a stolen base. Like they'll help me a little bit. Don't crush me type scenario. Where the pitcher could destroy you. And so that's another reason kind of with what Curlin's saying that, and I also wanted to echo, because people are like, oh, are people going to take pitchers early because of all these pitchers coming up? Like, yes, they will. I will show you on Tuesday night when we record, pitching in the first 7 rounds, there will be pitching going early and often, because that's how these guys do things, and it makes sense.
Yeah, and especially for me, like in a 15, I don't approach 15s and 12s too differently. I'm a little more willing to take upside in 12s. Might be the only difference, because I know the replacement value is always greater in 12s off the waiver wire. So I'm willing to swing a little more for the fences a little earlier in drafts compared to 15s. I'll build a little safer. But like this year, I had 2 relievers and 3 or 4 starters in my first like 9 picks. Like I went really, and I don't regret it at all, because obviously, again, having Acuna to build off of, but it was also. I just felt I feel more confident building a pitching staff where it's like I'm going to build up the brunt of it right then and there in the early rounds, and then kind of pick and choose guys. Like, and again, I happen to hit on Justin Steele and others. That's why it's like, I have Brian Bayo. I don't understand how my pitching has struggled the way it has. That's why I get aggravated. But it's, again, another discussion for another day in terms of like what went wrong. Cause honestly, I'm trying to think, I have to go back and see who I streamed throughout the year here and there, but I barely had a stream pitching this year, but it's because I went so pitching heavy that all I had to do stream hitters. And I happened to also hit on some good hitters late. And it's, well, I just look at it like, I'm hoping it's one of those things where it's like, was this a 1 year fluke for me though? Am I going to be able to repeat this process and make it work? And the answer is going to be yes and no. I think there's going to be years where my process misses in terms of just, I picked the wrong players, but the actual team building that I put in place and implemented works. It's just, I picked the wrong players. Like this year, had I picked Camilo Duvall over Clay Holmes, I think we're having a different discussion here in terms of my overall standing, even with the struggling issues I've had to this point, among other things. And that was just one of those instances of like, my process was right in terms of what I picked. Just, I picked the wrong person, because it was like they were right there in the same range of ADP. So that's one of those things I have to tinker a little bit in terms of maybe my player analysis and closer analysis has always been my weaker point in terms of up until this year. Again, I went into the draft attacking pitchers, knowing that hitting analysis is always my strength. So I feel confident where I got my pitching analysis now. So it's a matter of implementing it into my draft process. But anyway, at the end of the day, though, yeah, I think taking pitchers early is a smart move, because for every, like, I know Sandy Alcantara is a terrible, I've said his last name two different ways already this show. I know it's a terrible example of like how, and like Julio Urias are two examples of how pitching can damn you early. But for every one of those guys you're taking earlier, you're still getting your Kevin Gossmans, you're getting your Coles. I know Cole's been a little shaky lately, but you're getting these guys that are staples at Strider. And there's a reason why you're still taking pitching early, because those guys are coming in and you don't have to worry about them. And having one of those is very valuable, especially if the other one fails. Like, I had Brandon Woodruff go on the IL for like 2/3 of the year, and I probably shouldn't have held him, to be honest. But I did, and now he's back. And now it's one of those things where if I didn't have Kevin Gossman, I would have been probably sunk. Because my pitching hadn't been good. Like, he'd been pitching, my pitching had been okay, but Gossman had been a difference maker up until this point, carrying me. Up until now, I have Gossman, which both back my lineup, Darvish pitching better. So it's one of those things where having a pitching heavy approach helped with those injuries. Whereas when hitters get injured, this could be a fluke year with prospect hitters and all that, but there's always something. I feel like there's always a streamable hitter on the bench or on the waiver wire to add to fill in those holes when a hitter gets injured, compared to the type of pitch you're getting off the waiver wire to fill in those holes if you get an injury. So that's why I'd rather build depth early in pitching to help counteract those injuries. Almost everyone's gonna get a pitcher injury. It's just the way it works. Like, you're getting at least one a year. It doesn't matter. Yeah. Maybe two. But if you build depth, you can take on one or two of those hits compared to, it's easier to take on one of those hits without having to depend on the waiver wire for it compared to with hitting. Again, I'm just reiterating it over and over again, that hitting's just way easier to find on the waiver wire all year long. So I'd rather take my chances. I know pitching is volatile and pitching injuries are more frequent, but I'd rather take my chances and build my pitching up strongly, just knowing how I can attack the waiver wire to benefit my team if I were to lose other parts. So I don't know. I think building pitching early is the way to go. That's my personal opinion on it. I know there's people that don't believe in that. There's plenty of people that won't buy into that. And if you win like that, that's fine. Do you. Win however you want. But I just found my best approach so far is taking at least two pitchers in the first 3 to 4 rounds. And it's rare. It's usually gonna be first three, especially by main event season when everyone pushes pitching up. It'll be 3 rounds. But like DC season, I'll be able to probably get by with like 2 in the first 5 rounds, just because pitching falls early. It's weird. Yeah. Pitching falls in DCs and raises up when you start getting to those main event seasons, you know, the live drafts and all that.
A couple things what Curlin's saying there, though, is a lot of that sounds like roster construction, which he mentioned early in the show that it comes back to. And B, that's more 15 teams than 12.
Yeah, sorry. So, yeah, I'll be.
I just want to bet. Like, you said main events. So I just want to let people know, like, 12s, which I play in a lot, I was still very comfortable with waiting until almost round 4 or 5. You look at the guilds, who's extremely successful in 12s, he waits. You look at Toby, who's towards the top of 12s right now, he doesn't wait. So, like, he waited this year a little more than usual, but like, there's many, many ways to build this. But in the end, it's how you build it, how you construct it. Like Curlin said, is, you know, if you go, some guys are thinking 4 hitters, 1 pitcher, 3 hitters, 2 pitchers. Like, how do you do it? How do you construct it? Like, and how do you construct it based around the statistics you're going for, so on and so forth? Then you throw in relievers into the mix, where this year you technically didn't really have to go early because everyone's getting saves. There's no like craziness going on there. So that's a whole other bag of fun that will probably flip on its head next year. But for now, it's fun in 2023. So we'll see.
Yeah, I can't wait for relievers to just be back to what they were in 2021. before, or 2022, I should say, at this point, when there was like just a carousel constant turning and turning. And that's it's gonna be cyclical. I think this year is gonna be more of the anomaly. I don't see a lot of this year being
same thing, yeah.
Maybe I'll be wrong. I don't think I'm gonna change my strategy to relief pitchers. I'm probably gonna avoid that top tier, live in the middle tier, or second tier is my first one, and then try to grab, like, if I can grab, like, it's hard to grab an Estevez, but maybe that's a bad thing, because having Estevez has been so bittersweet, because yeah, he got me the saves.
Yeah,
then he goes through, then he randomly just blows
those
up
ratio, on those blow ups are big blow ups
lately too, so that's why it's been rough. So it's one of those things where maybe investing in good closers regardless might be a better tactic. Maybe skip on that third starter, get two relievers that I could trust in more, and then maybe hope that hit. Maybe just it's gonna be something I toy with. I'm probably gonna toy with it in DC season and go early closer, see how I like it. That's why I think DCs are so great. They're so great before you get into fab leagues for sure.
All right. Well, we will do more discussions like this in the coming weeks to kind of vent/learn from things, help others learn, and then we'll do deep dives in the offseason, of course. But before we get into our fab review for the week, a couple bits of kind of breaking news that took place while we were talking. Mike Trout officially activated from the IL. He'll be playing Tuesday night in Anaheim, so he's back. Yordan Alvarez was scratched from the lineup on Tuesday after jamming his finger pregame in a door.
Nice.
So keep your eye on that one, folks. Fluky injuries like Curtin and I were talking about earlier, there's one for you. Yordan Alvarez, jammed finger. Now he's out tonight on Tuesday. So
probably out for a few days. Like, good chance he misses. Good chance you're taking a zero through Thursday if you're in FFPC formats. And then he could probably know it's an IL stint.
Yeah, some tough decisions this weekend.
But, there was one thing, one last thing about Fab real quick, because I know we have to move on to the stuff. I blew my fab too early this year, and I know everyone was kind of, hey, don't be so aggressive. I didn't factor in losing three key hitters late. Yeah, so that kind of screwed, like, don't get me wrong. Although I was being overly aggressive, and I'm down to dollar days with 6 weeks left, so I'm really in trouble here. Like, I'm scraping by, and I'll get again. I always find there's always lists of like 5 to 6 hitters, and I put them for a buck. I get one or two of them every time, so I'm not really worried in terms of getting streamers I like. But I don't have the money to go out and get a different, like, I couldn't go out and get Trevor Story. I couldn't go out and take a chance on the Angels rookie, I can't think of his name, who's leading off every day. I couldn't go out and take these chances on guys that could possibly fill these gaps because I didn't have the money to. And that's where I learned that I need to save more money for the end of the year. And I thought, you know, I was a little more confident. Naylor isn't known to get over, like, he gets dinged up, but he's never really injured. Young isn't really known. Like, he had the shoulder injury, but he's been healthy all year. Couple of fluke, an oblique and a thumb later, and then India with his foot. Like, it's just one of those things where I lost three huge pieces and didn't have the funds to go. So remember how I mentioned having those ancillary pieces that make a difference in a overall versus, like, just, or even just winning your league versus now it's keeping you afloat. That's when Nolan Jones and Chaz McCormick go from being my outfielder five and utility spots. Like, I'm loaded. Those are my back end guys, like back fringe roster guys, right? Guys, it's like, wow, I'm lucky to have these guys. Just like, if I don't even want to play them, I don't have to where now I need them. So, and their production has been good, but now it goes from that production being the extra production that keeps me going, sustains me at the highest level possible, to it's making me just get by. And now I'm filling the holes with, I'm lucky. I fell into Massey. I fell into Jordan Diaz. Those guys have been good, but it's still a huge step down in production. And so it's one of those things where so I don't have the money to go out and attack those holes as much. So that's where it's like, I kind of shot myself in the foot. Now, again, three big injuries like that to three core pieces of your team, that's something that most people can't get by regard. Like, but having Fab to help counteract that would have been helpful. So I realized this year that even though I was still, especially the top five teams, I think there's only two teams that had more Fab than me at the time in terms of the top five. And two of them were like in fourth and fifth, and the three of us were bunched together with like very little money. So I'm like, all right, cool. I can still be competitive with the guys that have the most chance of catching me / competing with me for my actual league. But because I played that whole, like, I tried playing my league, and then I kind of screwed myself into not having enough fab because of how I did. I got a little aggressive with it and thought I can get by, because I counted on one injury maybe or so, you know, one, but I didn't expect it to be three and be three significant ones to three significant parts of my team. So, and you can never count on that. You can never plan for that. But had I had more fab left, like say $150 versus 30 type of thing, then, you know, you kind of are planning for that, because now you can go out and get Trevor Story when he gets called up. You can go out and get whatever it might be, just a piece that could
be possibly glad you couldn't get Trevor Story.
Yeah, well, you get my point, though. At least, like, having the opportunity to go out and get insert if Noelle Marte becomes a thing, I couldn't go out and get him. The guy from the Angels, again, I can't say, I don't know his name. I just know he leads off every day. But those are the types of things that I want the opportunity to go out and get potential difference makers. And I can't go out and get those because I don't have the money to do it. And that's where it hurts you. So make sure you're a little more diligent in saving fab for the end of the year, even if you don't feel like you truly need it. Like, I really didn't think I was going to need it this year like that. And I kind of like screwed myself with that thought process because I let myself get a little too aggressive, a little too cute. And now I need to get a little lucky here with the production in order to creep back into even the top 50 in the overall, which doesn't pay anything at that point. But at least top 50 in the overall likely pushes for my league title, which is kind of the point where I'm targeting. But it's just aggravating because I set myself up for that level, that failure end of the year by being overly aggressive throughout the season. And when I was in a position I didn't need to be in, but it also goes back to being over aggressive and paying too much on the streamer. So it's kind of it's all built in. Like, I realized the reason why I have no money at the end right now wasn't just being aggressive throughout the year, but it was because I was overspending on streamer types when I didn't have to, because I might have put some I might have overvalued them in a sense when no one else was valuing them like that, or just being like, I wasn't being as mindful. Like, all right, cool, I could spend $15 on this guy, and he was like a $5 player, you know? So like that, you know, next you know, oh crap, what I would do for $50 right now, which I'm sure if I go back, I can find way more than $50 I probably wasted or whatnot. So yeah, it kind of all leads to each other, but it's one of those things where I want to be more diligent with what I spend throughout the season on streaming, specifically streamer types, because again, I will go after guys I believe in and spend actual money on them. But and then of course making sure while doing that, simultaneously saving a certain amount, X amount of dollars for the end of the season.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom has created weight management programs that are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. So stop chasing health trends and join the millions who have lost weight with Noom. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
All right. Well, we'll figure out and see where it goes from there. But lessons learned. Let's talk about fab from week 21 NFBC OCs. The most added player, and I was actually impressed people picked up on this, picked up in 103 leagues, as high as $65, as low as a buck. I guess if you're riding an 8-game hitting streak, people will see it. He snapped it on Sunday. But over his last 9 games, Stone Garrett, hitting .438 with 5 doubles, 2 homers, 11 RBIs. He's been outstanding. He's a guy that I know we've noticed in the past, more of a platoon guy against lefties, sitting versus righties. The Nats are playing him every day, and he is producing in a big way. So I even wrote him up in an article over the weekend that he's getting to the 12-team viability, which obviously this shows in OCs. Definitely 15-team viable. What's your thoughts on Stone Garrett?
Don't get me wrong. He's a streamer. You're streaming him right now. I feel like we've seen this before from him. He's gotten hot in the past. That's why there's always intrigue. Like, oh, there's a path to playing time. We saw him do this with the D-backs. I believe it was last year. D-backs. Yep. I think it was Diamondbacks.
Yep.
So we've seen him get hot for stretches. And I'm not saying this is anything less, or I think this is all that is, but it doesn't matter because, again, 6 weeks left, whatever it is, 5 weeks left. You ride the hot hand until it's not hot anymore. The playing time is there. I believe he's hit towards the middle of the lineup now even.
Yep, moved to like fifth and sixth, yeah.
So you're getting the play appearances, you're getting the hot, and he has the tools. It's not like Stone Garrett doesn't have tools to actually succeed in that. Like with an everyday role, it's a matter of just being consistent. I don't think you're gonna get consistency out of him, but it doesn't matter what you're gonna get out of him rest of season, or it doesn't matter what you're gonna get out of him in terms of like just ride it out while it's happening. So I understand it, totally get the ad, and I do like him because I always like betting on tools when you're betting on a streamer, and that's what you're getting. You're getting the fact that you're getting playing time, you're getting the tools, and you're getting production right now, so ride it for sure. But Stone Garrett, yeah. I gotta say his name because otherwise people yell at us.
You gotta say Stone Garrett.
Stone Garrett.
I'm with you on that one. Let's talk the next player, Noelvi Marte. This is why it's fun this time of year. You know, 2 months ago, every prospect would have been added in every league. Not anymore. Noelvi Marte added in 96 leagues, as high as 212, as low as a dollar. People still had $212, apparently. I hate those people. But Noelvi Marte, he's played two games. He has a double and a stolen base over those two games. In the minors, hit 279 with 11 homers, 18 stolen bases. Pretty productive there. He's supposed to play pretty much every day with the IL spot. I believe it was Newman that went on the IL for Cincinnati. So Noelvi, I picked up Noelvi in a couple leagues. I didn't like go crazy, of course, but in leagues I needed a potential, you know, a little bit of power and speed, I was interested, especially Great American Small Park. But the last thing I will mention before I hand it over to you, he hit fifth in one game and seventh in another. So I'd imagine he stays towards the bottom of the order also. But what's your thoughts on Noelvi Marte?
So I'm not so worried about him batting in the bottom of the lineup. I just want to see if the playing time is going to stick. And so far, I mean, he's started against a lefty yesterday or 2 days ago when he made his debut, batted seventh. And he's batting seventh right now today against a righty. So it looks like he's not going to platoon. But I'm trying to figure out who he's playing in favor of. So that day, Will Benson sat. Stuart Fairchild was out. Fairchild left injured maybe that game. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it's when he got his concussion. Is that Sunday?
So you mentioned Newman. Okay, fine. He took Newman's spot against a lefty. But then who's he taking against? I'm trying to figure out who he's taking against a righty just by looking at it. CS is there. Botto is there. Steer is there. De La Cruz is there. And McClain. Who I'm trying to figure out who we're missing. Friedel. Friedel's not there.
Friedel, Votto.
Votto's there. Friedel's not in lineup today. Okay. So they put Benson in. So Benson, DHing CES. It still seems weird. Like, I feel like there's not supposed to be. Oh, well, Friedel is there. Wait a minute. Who's missing? Friedel's
leading off, dude.
I missed that. So I'm trying to think, why was there no spot for him? Or why was there a concern for no spot for him? It's been so, I'm trying to think, was it just because there's so much?
Yeah,
I think, so you know what? Steer, I think Steer was a question mark. Putting Steer's in left field tonight.
Yeah, they're moving Steer to the outfield.
That's it. Okay, there it is. Because I couldn't figure out, like, because Steer, wasn't he factoring into the infield recently?
He was, and they said when they called Marte up, Steer would move to the outfield more, and Newman went to the IL.
Yeah, well, Newman was a waste. But yeah, so that's what happened. So I couldn't figure out. So yeah, on the fly, this is what I'm over here, like, beating myself up. I'm like, where is it, the playing time? So that's what happened. Steer's to the outfield. So this can mess with the outfield rotation, if I guess, but at the same time, they don't really have an issue with that right now.
Fraley is out right now with an injury.
Yeah, so as long as Fraley's out, they don't really have an issue. Senzel isn't. Didn't he get optioned, or is he injured?
Yeah, he's gone.
I know he's out of the picture, but it's just crazy because all people were talking about was like, where's he gonna play? And I'm like, how's there no room for him at this point? So yeah, Marte, as long as he's playing every day, which I guess was my big question mark, was against righties because of how tight it's been. But it looks like they're gonna there's room for him right now. There's no reason why they won't play him. They called him up, and the tools are there. The ballpark is there. Marte is a guy that you should have a lot of interest in right now, and especially because they're playing time against righties, it looks like he's gonna be there. So.
Yep, there's currently room for him at the end. So we'll see how that continues to go. Yeah. Javier Assad picked up in 96 leagues, as high as 113, as low as a dollar. Hey, I'm a Javier Assad fan, but 113 is just crazy. Assad had a two-step this week, kicked it off 5 1/3, 2 earned on 2 solo shots, 4 Ks against Detroit. He's made 4 starts since getting put back in the rotation. It's been 2 earned runs or less in each start, but it's not a ton of strikeouts, a couple walks in each start. It's kind of a smoke and mirrors guy that's getting the job done right now. But what's your thoughts on Assad? Because he was very popular due to his two-step.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. I'm looking like there's nothing here that makes me feel like this is going to work out long-term for him. Assad is limiting barrels if you want to be like optimistic about something. But other than that, the hard hit rate's 40%. It's like, all right, whatever. K-minus walk rate is 6.7. That's 6.7. Like, that's awful. You want it to be at least in the teens. And even then, that wouldn't be great unless it's in the 20s. The 2.86 ERA over those four starts, and you mentioned it, you know, he's kind of getting by with those, over those two, over those four starts, three of which have been at least five innings. So he's getting the innings, but 2.6 ERA looks great on paper. Then you're looking at the 5.4 FIP, the 4.91 XFIP, and then the Sierra was 5.29. Just to give you an idea, that's pretty much suggesting that Assad is closer to a high fours to mid fives pitcher in terms of ratios. And the fact that he's walked as half as many players as he struck out at this point through 22 innings. Yeah. Kiss your clovers, rub your lucky rabbit's foot, whatever it is with Assad, because I don't think it's going to last long. But while it's here, you ride with it. But yeah, I think it's all this two-step streamer, and then he's back on your waiver wire, because Assad is, I wouldn't be holding on. Like, there's no way he's sustained. It's going to be, when it blows up, it's going to be one of those 2 to 3 innings, bad. 8 earned run bad. Type of deals.
Yeah, it's because this has a Graham Ashcraft vibes to it to me. Paul Blackburn, this is one of the boring pitchers I was kind of hinting at earlier. Picked up in 87 leagues, as high as $31, as low as $1. The Assad people should have been spending on Blackburn if you could. Blackburn threw on Monday night. He has 2-step this week, 6 innings, 2 earned, 6 Ks. What I love about him, over his last 6 starts, it's been 2 earned runs or less in 5 out of 6, 5 Ks or more in 5 out of 6. He has a 2.25 ERA, 3.73 XFIP, and 36 Ks and 36 innings pitched. He's been very effective. Very effective. If you can go deeper into the season, there is the occasional blow up, but overall he's been pretty darn effective, especially in deeper formats. So what's your thoughts on Paul Blackburn? Again, he's 2-step this week, which made him popular, but he's been a guy in deeper leagues I've used a few times this year.
He's like a better version of Kyle Gibson, Paul Blackburn. I only say that because I feel like he has that similar like ratio aspect. Like, he's closer to a 4, and he has a 4.22 Sierra, which goes right in hand with that 4 ERA. 4.05 XFIP. Yeah, the FIP is 3.54, but I would trust 3 out of 4 of those numbers, you know, and Sierra being one of the better indicators, if not the best, I believe. But yeah, he's, you know, Paul Blackburn, great ballpark, terrible for wins, although he has 2 wins in his last 5 starts, so good for him. But at the end of the day, I mean, a 9.9 swing strike rate when league average is, I think, around like, what, 12-ish, 11-ish? He is getting some chases, good for him. But I really do think it's just a little more strikeout upside than Gibson, I guess, even though the swing strike rate might suggest otherwise. And the ratios have been better, but I think that's home ballpark induced, which if I look at the splits, I can tell you right now how much better home and away splits are. Yeah, he is, his ERA, just looking at the ERA and the WOBA, all that, like the home park obviously doesn't favor. So at the end of the day, I think Paul Blackburn is serviceable, definitely worth streaming in a 2-step. And if you take advantage of the home starts, go for it, because, he's okay. He's okay. Like, there's nothing special about him, but he's not going to kill you. He's a boring guy that belongs probably at the back end of most rotations, especially in 15s and 12s. He's a little fringier, just because I don't buy the strikeouts being much of a help rest of season. So the ratios are okay, but then there's not a lot of win upside. So what is he really offering you in 12s that's going to help you? So I understand streaming for the 2 starts because you're taking the quantity at that point. But outside of a 2-start week in 12s, I have a hard time holding on to Blackburn, unless you want to stream off your bench type of thing. But in 15s, he's definitely a guy you want to have right now for sure.
Yeah, I just like his strikeout upside. A lot of these streamer guys these days aren't the best. Like, we just talked about Assad and stuff.
Yeah,
it's pretty rough in those streets. Mason Winn added in 85 leagues, as high as 146, as low as a dollar. I wasn't really in on Mason Winn, given his minor league numbers, 288, 18 homers, 17 steals is great. He's picked up 3 hits in his first 4 games for a 2.14 average, but nothing else. Near 29% K rate. You listen to the prospect guys; he's more of a better baseball player than fantasy player is kind of what you hear out there. So I wasn't really in on Mason Winn. Were you interested in Mason Winn?
I couldn't afford him if I wanted to anyway. But in terms of playing time, he has it right now. He started 4 straight. I don't know if he's in the lineup tonight, but I would assume he is. Yeah, I'm sure he is. It doesn't really matter, honestly. So 4 straight, 5 straight, including tonight. And it's appealing because, you know, 18 home runs and 17 stolen bases on the very lowest of levels tells you that he's not a 0 for power and that he will steal bases. And he's 17 for 19, so he's very efficient on the base pass, at least he was this year in AAA. So Winn has that power speed, and I understand that. I don't have access to his minor league numbers. I'm sure we could – actually, these days with StatCast and AAA, I'm sure we can get it, but – just one of those guys where it's like, we have to wait and see. I don't know if the power is going to necessarily play up as much as it did in the minors, but why did it play up in the minors if it's not really there is kind of my next question. I would like to talk to somebody who actually has seen more of his minor league stuff. Like, why did Mason Wynn's power play up to 18 home runs over a season without pulling the ball a whole lot? I mean, the 39.6% pull rate in the in AAA. He does elevate the ball well. The ground ball rate's below 40%, so maybe just elevating the ball well. But if you're elevating the ball well and you're not pulling it a ton, the power has to be more legitimate than not, right? In order for it to carry to be home runs, unless where do they play in a hitter friendly? I don't know much about the AAA system here. That's why
most AAA it's in Memphis, and Memphis is nice and warm, and the ball will fly.
So maybe that helped carry it, unfortunately, and that's what maybe. So maybe that plays into why the power is more fluky than factual for evaluators. But at the end of the day, I'm okay with it. I'm not a huge fan. I didn't go out. Even if I had the money, I wouldn't have gone crazy after him just because of how they've treated prospects and their players all year in St. Louis. But right now the playing time is there. There is an intriguing skill set. If you need speed, Wynn is a guy that you probably should go after, especially considering again, playing time and the skill set, at least being a stolen base guy. But it's still not a guy I'm overly excited about, batting ninth in that order and not doing much so far. Small sample, obviously, but yeah.
Mike Clevinger had two-step this week, picked up in 84 leagues, as high as $31, as low as one. He's been effective of late since coming off the IL on July 29th. Clevinger has put together four decent outings, three runs or less in all four, one in or less in three of four. More importantly, his last two starts, 13 strikeouts against the Cubs and the Yankees. Not a thing he's been doing very well. You look at the ERA, but then you look at the xFIPs and everything else, definitely got on the luckier side of things that start. Did have two nice two starts this week. Were you interested on him on the two-step?
No. I'm never interested in Mike Clevinger anymore.
Okay. Fair enough.
I understand he's coming off two good starts, but I don't know, man. I feel like it's always smoke and mirrors with him. And every time he shows a little bit of something, it just goes back to completely getting crapped on. So it's like, if I'm just attacking it via volume, like I need strikeouts, maybe some win potential, sure. But Clevinger's not a guy that – he kind of falls into that same category of like Mason Wynn, where it's like, I understand the ad. I'm just not all that interested or buying into much rest of the way.
All right, let's do a couple quick hitters here. Nick Lodolo is supposed to be coming off the IL sooner than later. He's picked up in 67 leagues. Obviously, probably not available in 15s. Logan Ohapi was picked up in 79 leagues, as high as $45. I'm still nervous about the injury there, but were you in on a guy like Logan Ohapi?
I mean, in two catcher leagues, absolutely. In one catcher leagues, I probably wouldn't be as optimistic just because we're talking a shoulder here. And we know that stuff like that can take some time to get their power back. Since he's come back, let's see, he's been back two games. He's 0-for-9, of course. Yep. So it doesn't really help. I'm trying to see, like, I was just curious, like, maybe he had a couple, like, oh, maybe he had three hits and two of them were extra base hits. All right, cool. That suggests there's some power. So maybe you're watching, monitoring him. Like I said, one catcher leagues, not a must add right now. I mean, I'd probably still probably try to go out and get him in one catcher leagues just because we saw what he could be or what he was doing prior to the injury, which was also a very small sample, but at least a lot of promise there. And I do like that they're putting him right back. I believe it was like fifth or sixth in the lineup. So he's pretty much batting like towards the middle of that lineup, which the lineup itself on paper isn't bad at all. But yeah, they still have him back at sixth tonight, even with Trout back. So anyway, at the end of the day, though, yeah, I mean, I get it. I would definitely make a point to add him probably in most cases. It'd be rare. There's a spot that I wouldn't want Ohapi, but yeah, I don't know. I think upside alone warrants an add at the position.
Alan Winans and Zach Lytle, 67 leagues, 66 leagues, as high as 26 for Winans, 61 for Lytle. Both two-steppers this week. Lytle's been looking pretty good, actually, in his time with the Rays. Winans was looking good, got blown up on Monday night. Were you interested in either of these guys this week?
If anything, Lytle, just because he's, you know, has shown glimpses, been solid at times. The two-step, why not take a shot with the Rays? You know, he's been pretty solid. I know it's been kind of smoke and mirrorsy. We talked about him a little bit, I believe it was a couple episodes ago. So, Lytle, there's reasons at least to buy into what we've seen. But I think Winans, it's funny that you mentioned, I'm pretty sure he got optioned after that game. Like, he optioned today. I think he optioned today, like earlier today, before we recorded. And they called up Schuster. So the worst part is you got him for the two steps, the two starts, and you're not going to get him for the second start. You just get
the one bad start and see you later.
Most likely, unless they IL somebody in between then and bring him back up. But it was Winans was looking good, but it was against, like, I remember his opponent matchups were like pretty favorable for him. And it was also a guy that was just like making it work, even though it didn't really make sense how, and it kind of, it looks like it caught up to him. So we'll see. The Braves are getting by with piecing it together with their rotation. So
last guy I'm going to ask you about here, Nolan Chenal, got called up by the Angels, basically playing college ball about a month and a half ago. Added in 53 leagues, as high as 75, as low as a dollar. He has one hit in each game so far. Got a slap hittery approach, though. So I don't know how well the power will translate. Plays pretty much every day, though, for the Angels. He's led off all three games, which is pretty impressive. So what was your take on a guy like Chenal this week?
I would have gladly gone after him if I had the money to, just because why not? They're playing. Not only are they calling him up, there's like no minor league data. You can go to college data, but how helpful is that when it comes to the transition from college to, hey, I'm playing the pros a month later or whatever. But you see what I really like about an approach like his is that he walks when they strikes out. So right then and there, you know, there's a good plate approach. There's a good recognition of the zone and the plate, and that could help him. That could help right there. A transition be a little easier for him. You mentioned it. Maybe it's more of a slap hitter approach. It's still early. It's one of those things where we have no actual MLB or any real data, because he pulled the crap out of the ball in Double A, but that was what, 16 games. I don't know. He's hitting the ball on the ground a ton, over 55% of the time at 2 out of 3 stops this year. Or sorry, 2 out of 4. He's almost at 55% in the major league level. So he's that pull hit. The pull heavy approach on Double A hasn't quite transitioned yet. Hitting a ton on the ground. There's growing pains here, obviously. I don't know if I should expect a whole lot. So that's why I wouldn't have been crazy about going after him, just because there's so much unknown here. But on the very basic level of walking more than striking out at every stop, like, again, very small sample, but even doesn't matter where he's been, even at the major league level so far, walking twice as much as striking out, that means something to me. So I think there's reasons for optimism, but I just don't know if we should be expecting a whole lot of fantasy juice this year. I think it's one of those things where we're getting a little look at him. He'll adapt, and next year will probably be up pretty early or break camp with the team, because they're being uber aggressive with their prospects last few years. But rest of season, I'm not overly optimistic, but it's worth taking a shot on in deeper formats. Not sure he's 12-team relevant just yet, more than a bench bat, just to see where it goes.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you on that one. All right, none of the other moves were too super relevant, or actually guys we talked about in recent weeks, so they've been continuing to get picked up. But let's talk about some listener questions here. Dave Petrosiello, and this is a long thread you guys kept going with. If you have a team that's totally wins unlucky, imagine you guys have seen some of my rants, and with 6 weeks left, there are still points to gain and saves, and you have 4 viable closers, Hader, Kimbrel, Alzolay, and Santos. Do you just say screw it and go 5-4 relievers starting pitching, or vice versa? Think I'm doing that. What was your guys' verdict when that was all said and done?
Well, I read what they were saying, and it really comes down to look at you. For me, I didn't chime in because I really wanted to talk. This was actually something I wanted to talk about because it goes back into strategy, and I love talking strategy. So for this question, it really comes down to look at your team, do the math in terms of what gets you the most points in your standings. Because obviously, if you're trying to transition to one attack or the other, you're probably looking at winning your league, not so much an overall aspect, right? So you want to look at your team, look at your standings, be like, all right, cool. 5 wins gets me 3 points, but like 6 saves gets me 1 point. You probably should do what Gills was saying, throw caution to the wind a little bit, but you have to be mindful. Are you like neck and neck I think it's ERA that, like,
yeah, because trying to get wins can burn you.
2 good starts probably gets me 3 to 4 points in my ERA right now compared to. So it's like it's a real fine line of which way to go with it. But at the end of the day, you really have to sit there, look at your standings, try to do the math the best you can in terms of what's going to get you the most points at the end of the year. And that's how you determine what attack to make. So if you have a really healthy lead in saves, or if you're close to, like, if you say you're like 6 or 7 saves on the next guy, I'd say it's a pretty solid lead. Maybe not completely ditch closers, but go like, I think Gills even said like 8-1, which makes a lot of sense. But at the end of the day, you're chasing wins. You have to be very careful with the ratios. So there's give and take to every approach, but you got to do what you just really have to take the time to really look at your standings and determine which way to go.
Maximize because those points.
That's the only way to really do it. And if you think right now you're in first place and you're like, well, going for wins could hurt me here. Like, I can gain 3 points, but I can lose 4. But meanwhile, sustaining this, I might only be able to gain 1 or 2. You kind of have to weigh that risk reward of like, how much do you really need those 3 or 4 extra points? Can gaining 2 points be all I need to win my league at this point? Do I really need to go for those 3 or 4 points? And the answer might be yes. So then that's what you go for, because do you really want to play for second or do you want to play to win? I'd rather play to win and risk missing the money than settling for second, unless we're like a week out or 2 weeks out. Then I'm like, all right, cool, I'll play for second. I get it. But you're talking 6 weeks. You can still make a lot of moves. You can still make a lot of movement in standings. Yep. So, but yeah, at the end of the day, I don't think it's as simple as picking one side or the other without doing the homework on your own standings first.
For sure.
I hope that was helpful.
Yeah, it was. It makes total sense to me, as I've been doing every week on the big leagues. I'm trying to keep moving on. MKB Fantasy Baseball is kind of a two-parter here. First off, what are you guys doing with Hunter Green, hold or fold? I've talked about this on a few shows, like the Welsh and I talked about it on Monday and a few others. I mentioned with Green, it's my philosophy has always been the same as A, probably wouldn't have started him right off the IL. That's just a no-go to begin with. B, you don't start him in Great American. You start him on the road. His upcoming starts, he's at Arizona and at San Francisco. Rock and roll. Pitch Hunter Green. When he goes back to Great American, probably put him on your bench. That's where I stand. I don't know what your thoughts are on Hunter Green.
That's where I've been on him most
of the time. Yeah, that's the same. Yeah, it's
been this, I think we talked about these guys. Like, yeah. Unfortunately, Hunter Green has so much talent, and it's such a small sample. It's not fair to say that these are his splits, but
it's pretty glaring.
For the career, I mean, this year's so small, so it's really hard to just take the small sample. This year, it's like almost the ERA is like double on the road at home right now. But if you look at his career so far, again, still a small sample, 86 innings at home, 115 away, a 550 ERA with 60 more points of WOBA compared to a 3.82 ERA on the road and a 306 WOBA at home. And those, again, very basic stats. And right there tells you there's a huge home road split for him right now just because that ballpark is so stupid. And you look at everything else, like in terms of like FIP, XFIP, all that, they all kind of back the numbers on the road and at home. The WHIP is a 20-point difference. The BABIP is actually the same, which is really funny. So it's like it's wild, the difference at home and road plays for him. So I'm not saying it's going to be – because I think Great American Small Park has turned into Coors – or it's actually turned into a better Coors Field.
Yeah.
So you got to be very mindful with your pitchers there, even a guy like Hunter Green. And something, just a fun fact I noticed today in the Savant write-up was his slider was different in this first start back. It was like 2.5 miles per hour slower, which can help. Maybe it'll help because it'll create a greater difference in the velocities. But I feel like that's more helpful with changeups and fastballs, unless the fastball and the slider tunnel well and all that. But anyway, the reason why that matters is because with that lesser velocity, it looks like it's by design because he's getting more movement on it. So maybe he's toying with that slider. Maybe it was just a one start thing. Just keeping an eye on it, because I know we always like the slider and fastball combo can play up for him very well. But maybe he's trying to make it get a little more movement on it, a little less velocity. Will it tunnel as well? A lot of questions we don't know the answers to, and it could have just been a one start anomaly for all we know. So we'll see. Because I mean, this whole time he was off, was he working on the slider? Is it better? We for the first example of that of whatever happened. I don't know what can't say it was a slider. Necessarily, whoever you did that start probably doesn't want to repeat that, right? So yep, we'll see what definitely happens. But just something I just caught when I was looking at the Savant recaps, like, huh, the slider looks different. And and that can make or break. We saw it work for John Gray when he did the opposite, where he increased the velocity, dropped some of the movement on it, and was more effective for a little bit. So, and pitchers tinker all year long. So I'm not saying it's a for sure like set in stone like move or change.
Well, it makes you wonder, is he tinkering because of his injury? Like, what's he tinkering for right now?
Did he have time to tinker with it?
That's what took place there.
Maybe it was better in practice and it just didn't translate to the game. Who knows?
Yeah, very true. The second part of MKB Fantasy Baseball's question. Paxton or Hunter Green rest of season? Since the All-Star break, Paxton's made 7 starts, gave up 6 earned last night in Houston, but he's allowed 21 earned runs over 34 and a third innings. It's a 5.5 ERA with a 4.3 xFIP and 33 Ks and 34 and a third. That was one thing he was doing well, was striking out a bunch of guys. He's not even a K per nine since the All-Star break. So definitely coming back to earth, which you honestly kind of would have expected after missing that much time on injury. You couldn't imagine him doing that the entire season. But would you rather go Hunter Green or James Paxton the rest of the way?
I'm taking Hunter Green. I'll even start him at home over maybe I'm pushing my luck there, but because I haven't believed in James Paxton all year. It kind of burned me initially, but it looks like it's coming back to being at least a little right because I didn't pay up for him or nothing. But at the end of the day, I'm just going to go Green. I think I broke down Green. I can get into Paxton, but I feel like we know what he is. I know the velocity's been up this year, blah, blah, blah. But I trust Hunter Green to be better. I mean, if I was drafting today, I'm drafting Hunter Green over Paxton 10 times out of 10. So I'm kind of treating it like I would on draft day. Like, I know I kind of could throw ranks out the window, so to speak, but I want the better pitcher. I guess at the end of the day, I want the better player. I want the better player that even if I have to spot start him rest of the season, I want to be able to spot start Hunter Green because I'm already not going to – I'm not treating Paxton as a must-start either. These guys are both in that streamer category, although Hunter Green I do trust. If I had to just plug and play one of them, I'm plug and playing Hunter Green. But either way, I'm treating both these guys – I'm playing matchups the rest of the way with these guys, and I want Hunter Green for his matchups. I'm going to take the rest of the way over Paxton.
All right, last question we have here is from our good buddy Britton Allen. Sup, y'all. The Dodgers put J.D. Martinez on the IL finally. Any interest in Michael Bush, who was called up? Bush is hitting 323 in the minors, 24 homers, 3 stolen bases. People like wanting him up so bad in his limited time with the Dodgers earlier this year and 51 plate appearances, hit 200 with no homers and a steal. Britton says, any interest in Michael Bush? Or is it Ryan Noda time since he's back? Allen's been on Noda from the get-go. I love Noda. I put him back in my lineups this week in my draft and holds. But any interest in Michael Bush?
I want to say yes because the skills have always been super flashy, like in the minors. And I feel like so right now, you know, he's platooning, period. End of discussion. He is platooning, right? That's happening. So you have a guy who's going to platoon with Michael Bush. So right there, he's limited in playing time. I'm sure Noda might probably platoon as well. You know, Noda's not even in tonight against a righty, but maybe it's just a rest day at this point. But at the end of the day, I would probably take Noda ahead of Bush just because we haven't seen Bush succeed at the major league level. We haven't seen the team give him an opportunity to play regularly, regardless of a spot being open for him. And Bush has nothing left to prove in the minors, but there's a reason why the Dodgers aren't giving him run at the big league level. And I know he's not the great defensively, so the DH spot being open does help, but he's not a good fielder. So when Mookie needs a day off or when Max Muncy needs to play, you know, gets DH, are they going to put Bush in the field or are they going to let Bush play 4 out of 5 righties? So it's like taking away already limited playing time and making it more limited. So that's why at the end of the day, I think Noda's the play here between the two. But I really I'm always intrigued because Bush's numbers are always so gaudy. The minors, but he never gets any real shot.
It makes you wonder if like they really wanted him, wouldn't they have called him up earlier? Like that's where I'm like, because you kind of said it all with the Dodgers, the way their playing time plays out. If they wanted to give him regular run, they could have done this a long time ago is my point.
Yeah.
So that's where it's just struggling. Like I just wouldn't break the bank is what I would try to say. Like Noda, then again, Noda's not even in the lineup tonight. So you got that going for you. So.
That's why it's like neither one's a win-win right now. But if I had to pick one right now, I'm probably picking Noda. Based on what we saw to this point in the year, plus what we've seen the playing time be to this point in the year compared to the two. So, but remember, Bush was called up for a similar reason. He was supposed to. There was a spot for him every day, and they still didn't give it to him.
You know what's really interesting is they did call up Bush and not Vargas. Just gonna throw that one out there.
How's Vargas doing? Man, what a bust. I think we were all wrong on him.
Oh, I had
zero, I loved Vargas.
Zero shares. I loved him.
I liked him. He got his price got inflated. I wasn't a huge fan. In the minors, he's hitting 291 with 5 home runs, 5 stolen bases in AAA.
He's no Bush.
No, but he's having a solid.
He's going to be just fine. I just didn't want to pay the price tag that he got up to this year. That was
him and Mervis are going to be really fun early drafts.
There's going to be a lot of them. There's going to be a lot in that conversation of, you know, the Nolan Gorman, the Jaron Durans, the guys that flamed out in their first kind of first or second chances. Like, where do you get the discount this year?
Colas is going to be free Colas, next year.
Yeah, there's going to be some interesting names like that.
Lenin Sosa too. Kind of being overlooked now because he's been like, meh. With that, I know he was.
But anyway. that'll be a different podcast, and we will talk about that at a later time. As we wrap up this week, Kurland, do you have any final thoughts?
That's all I got.
I know you do, but we're going to call it right there.
Yep.
Because you'll give more thoughts next week and maybe the week after, and we'll see from there. Usually. But everybody, make sure you go check out Mike on Twitter at Mike_Kurland. Always putting out his great videos, his YouTube page, and much, much more. So check all that good stuff out. I'm on Twitter at BDentric. Well, we might be back with you guys next week. Maybe not. We'll see. But for now, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 602. Catch y'all later.
Looking for a fun way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.